Good morning. It's the 9th of June, 2020, from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, in the United States of America, on God's good, great planet Earth. I'd like to read a verse to you. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. But the sentence against the evil deed is not executed quickly. Therefore, the hearts of the sons of men amongst them are given fully to do evil. I'm going to read it again. Because the sentence against an evil deed, the murder of George Floyd, that was the evil deed. Because the sentence was not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men were fully given to do evil. I recall that verse, I preached it while I was going verse by verse through the book of Romans. And I was trying to share with the congregation at that time that when a person sees an unjust deed committed and you don't render an accusation against that deed, then men's hearts are going to wax cold and demand justice in such a way that it brings about retribution on the behalf of those that do not respond quickly. It's kind of like an American Revolution that I'm living through in real time. And this is a Tuesday morning in Los Angeles. It's going to be up into the upper 80s today. Not a cloud in the sky. The sun is up. It's about 8:32 in the a.m., and I'm looking forward to a good day. But I thought that I'd take some time and share that verse with you. I've always found that in this book, I can find a verse that kind of like tucks you right into the system in which we're living. And it amazes me that the preachers of our society today don't seem to want to use the book because they can't seem to find exactly that particular verse that ascribes to the times that we're living in. Well, we are living in those times today, and we can see it. The funeral has been had, the memorial services have finished, but the marches still go on because police reform is on the table. Yes, I believe in neighborhood policing, meaning that if you're going to have a police force, that the people working on the force are working the beats on the policemen in the police agency should be from the part of town that they're working. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. If you need more policemen to police the area of the part of town that you live in, they should be individuals that grew up in that part of town, came up in that part of town, the kind of individuals that understands the community, understands what a party goes over the 12 midnight time slot. The music is still being played. The people are dancing and having a good time. There needs to be community policing. George can come through there and say, hey, guys, how much longer are you going to be here? Your neighbors want to get some sleep. George backs off. He doesn't come in there with a battering ram to destroy the party and the party goers. We need to revamp the way we think about doing policing in this country, all over the country. Of course, that means tearing down the older systems, and we have to do away with them because it appears that the older systems are not working towards any particular goal right now. The goal is not being adhered to. Also, I would say that as we look at the problems, and not only in America, but all over the world, the police agencies all over the world, they need to rethink the way they're policing. When you have people abandoning their particular country and coming to another country in order to face some kind of freedom, liberty, and justice, the police need to be sensitive to those people's needs. Their children are hungry. They've been on a long journey. They're human beings. Of course, they're undocumented because they weren't born in the country. But as humans would do, they will always leave less fortunate environments to come into a more favorable condition of living. It's the way it's been for years. But we cannot continue to ignore the foul play, the injustice, really the racial hate of certain police personnel against the very population that they're supposed to serve. If you have a bias against people, you have no business with a badge and a gun and a stick or a club. The stories are all coming out. I hear a fresh one every day from a black man, how he was unjustly pulled over and his life was turned upside down because of a bigoted policeman who possibly saw this black man driving a very popular sports car. And the policeman could never own anything like that, not on his salary, but because of envy and jealousy. These common characteristic traits of human beings, when he has on the public shield or the badge of authority to defend justice and the law, works against it. This is what we have facing us in this George Floyd case. You know, a lot of people brought up, well, George smoked marijuana. So do I. Well, George did this. So have I. Well, you know, he wasn't the nicest of guys when it came to this. So am I. So are you. Doesn't give a cop a right to choke me to death. I'm glad that I lived this long to see this take place in my country. Before, I was like most people of my age. But I'm pleased to say that I'm alive and I witnessed all of this. And people are constantly sending me clips of, I just got one, that's what the bling was on my phone. I've seen this clip already. The police officer has a gun on the grandmother in her front yard. Because it appears that the COVID-19 counts are going down, that we're going to be hitting the streets again. At least I won't. I don't have anywhere to go. But if we've survived this, let's hope that our nation can survive the blight that's come on us from these killings, murderers, in authoritative uniforms. I pray to God that we... you hear that? I pray to God that we come to an agreement amongst ourselves that this kind of behavior in police departments come to a screeching halt. I'm going to have to call a police sergeant friend of mine. I just got his number from another ex-employee of the LAPD. I'm going to give him a call and see how he's doing. There's another bling. Somebody else send me a deal here. Listen to this. I think you get a kick out of it.
It was called the Red Summer of 1919, named for the blood that ran through America's cities during months of racial unrest. African-American soldiers had returned home from the Great War, World War I, to a country still teeming with discrimination. And in their quest for civil rights, tensions between blacks and whites reached a tipping point. Deadly race riots broke out in over 24 cities, but one rural town, Elaine, Arkansas, would become the epicenter for the bloodshed. The violence there, lynch mobs, torture, indiscriminate murder, was so horrific it would go down in history not as a race riot, but as the Elaine Massacre. This is history. Dark history. During World War I, more than 350,000 African-American soldiers enlisted to serve. But while they fought for democracy abroad, their own country, America, was still not willing to see them as equal.
White supremacy was very mainstream at this time in the United States. Basically, a lot of African Americans were seeking to obtain their full rights and equality in the United States. And violence was often used by mobs of whites.
Tensions reached a boiling point in the summer of 1919. Race riots broke out in dozens of cities across the country. But in the rural South, something even more menacing was taking form. There, slavery existed in all but name. In a system called sharecropping, farmers provided landowners with labor for a share of crops produced. But the system was rigged. Sharecroppers were often kept in perpetual debt.
One black sharecropper raised $500 worth of cotton, and his landlord told him, "Yeah, but you used $697 worth of supplies, so you owe me money."
Everyone who has any power at this point is working to make sure they keep African-American laborers tied to the land.
For roughly 50 years, the system went unchecked. In the fall of 1918, a black man from Arkansas had had enough. Robert Hill had decided to form a union to represent sharecroppers. It was a dangerous decision, and one that would set off a chain of events involving mass murder, torture, and a landmark Supreme Court ruling. But first, he would need to organize.
Now, that is just one clip that someone sent me. And they wrote on it, "This is how they've been treating us through time and as long as we have existed." And this person is absolutely correct. And so when we look at the situation that we are confronted with now, the situation is one where people are saying, "I won't put up with that anymore." But now there's this. A 90-year-old woman came to help her grandson, who was laying on the front lawn with his hands up, and the policeman.
Okay. You ran a stop sign. You ran a stop sign. Chill out, bro. All we need him to do is no. We're
hey, ma'am.
We're not leaving.
She's standing over her grandson.
We're on a traffic stop. We just need him to comply so we can talk to him. And then that's it. Okay.
What is it wrong with the clip? When you have a young man who is pleading with officers, basically telling them, look, I'm unarmed, I'm not a threat, and they're not lowering their pistols. What we've seen over the past couple of months now through these videos that have been posted on social media, I think it, you know, would give anybody a heightened sense of fear when it comes to interacting with overly aggressive police officers when there's no justification.
And they threw his grandmother to the ground. And it was all
so Ty wanted to express to those
film.
Officers there that he wasn't a threat, but he also wanted to make sure he was safe, which is why he was in his grandmother's driveway upon leaving his vehicle. I mean, you have four or five high caliber pistols pointed at someone. I mean, just a singular mistake, a cop thinking that Ty was, you know, possibly a threat. You know, Ty could not be with us today. One minor mistake or just one false move could have ended up with not only Ty being riddled with bullets, but his grandmother's home and possibly her being riddled with bullets. So,
that's right. And see, these clips, and they're being sent all over the world, literally, to see what they're doing to black people. And there has to be a national revolution, a time when all of us come together and start thinking with a rational mind. Now, let me come down to the nitty-gritty. No, you don't defund police departments because you can't live in a society without law enforcement. There are too many criminals out there. And what I mean, human nature is prone to criminality. It's like human nature is prone to doing good deeds. You have a large amount of people that are sworn to do good, and you have, in some cases, an equally sizable amount of individuals that are prone to do wicked things. And so you need a sizable police force, and the larger the population, the more police protection we need. This is what civility is all about, but not a civility where you hire the wrong type of persons and place them in neighborhoods that are not their own. Not only background checks, but psychological exams. There has to be certain psychological exams where one is able to ask the question whether or not a law enforcement officer acquiesces to people of different nationalities, different cultures, different foods. I heard on the news this morning, they're opening up New York City, and there was a well-known Chinese restaurant, and the owner, which was a man of Chinese descent, said that people won't frequent his place like before because of COVID-19, because these biases, these individual prejudices that individuals come up with to justify themselves. And so we see the pendulum swinging on both ends, and we have to ask the question, who's right here? How do we get along? Very important questions. And then lastly, I'd like to end up with, what do we pray for? Since this thing has come out in March, and I find this interesting because it was in March 2018 that I had my open heart surgery. Wow. And it's been 2 years already since I had the open heart surgery. And to see the progression of the same type of murders taking place at the hands of police to our black civilian population, and the rage that the arrest caused. Now look what they did. They moved it up from third degree to second degree, and rightly so. And the other officers that were involved in that, and even the officer that had only been on the force 4 days, I heard on the news today that his attorney is trying to get him off, because his attorney said that he said to the guy with the knee on his neck, "Let him up, man, we have him." And so he may not go to jail. But the others, rightly so, because they didn't speak up as human beings for a fellow human being. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to back off from this situation right now. And I'm just going to wait and see how America is going to deal with these things. Oh, a couple of more things I want to say, because I've been away for a couple of days. The Colin Kaepernick, the taking a knee and all of that. If I ever make a statement about an incident, a thing that has taken place, that statement is going to hold. I'm not going to switch up and bow to public pressure. Let me give you a good example. The mayor of Minneapolis, Minnesota, has been courageous during this whole event until I saw one of the persons of Black Lives Matter ask him a question that no one in his right mind would answer. Yes or no? Are you going to defund all funding for the Minneapolis, Minnesota Police Department? Don't talk, just say yes or no. That is one of the oldest tricks of the dialectic, people. And I think that the mayor did the right thing. He immediately closed his mouth and walked away without saying anything. Because if he had said yes or no, his career would have been over. He had the know-it-all, the wisdom, to not answer an outrageous question, which was loaded. And then, of course, the lady said, "We know you're coming up for an election next year, and we know how to vote." That's blackmail. And any organization that would use blackmail against a person that has proven time and time again that he is on your team is out of focus. I see the dialectic used often, and what I've chosen to do, and I thought I'd tell you guys on this webcast, I am currently working on revamping or putting together some fresh slides on the dialectic and how it works in the African-American community, and starting a Zoom fellowship, and so that you would be able to tune in to Zoom and watch my color slides and converse with me about that. I am currently working on that right now. That's why you haven't heard from me. I'm busy. So as soon as I get that done, I will contact some of you by email and let you know what I am planning to do. And I would love for you to join me on Zoom and so that we can have a conversation about these things. My opinion will be from the old school wisdom, kind of a sage person talking. I'm not going to try to tell you this is the way it's done. I will only present these symbols of what has carried me through the day by using illustrations as to how those symbols worked and how they will continue to work. So keep listening, and I'll let you know about that. Download Zoom to your phone app, and we shall see. Wait a minute. Okay. I saw a young lady come out of the house and get in the car. It must be her family because she didn't have her face mask on. But some of the face mask things, the tensions are easing here in Los Angeles. And I'm kind of glad about that. A white woman admits, I grew up a racist. Well, of course. Thank you for coming to my website. A little less than 30 minutes. But I'll be back shortly with more. And I hope that you appreciate the video clips. Watch that clip that I have on the stream from Netflix. I think you find that very interesting. God bless.